the VSiN Weekend Morning Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are off and running on a Saturday morning. Hello, everyone. Tim Murray live from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. The NBA draft in the rear view. NBA and NHL seasons in the rear view as well. Full steam ahead. We've got MLB action galore. International Fight Week started earlier this week. We had Power Slap last night. And now UFC 317 this evening with two title fights. Wimbledon will be starting this upcoming week as well. So, yes, things are slowing down a little bit, but it's also that time to get ready for the football season, less than 60 days away. As I said, we are Quentin Nelson days away from the start of the college football season, as week zero will begin on August 23rd. Before we know it, training camps will begin all across the NFL. So we got plenty to get ready for today's show. Busy show for you. Great guest list, as I am excited to talk to a bunch of friends. I like to call all of our guests friends. Drew Dinsick going to join us coming up here in just a little bit. He'll join us actually at the bottom of the hour, 10:30. Brad Powers talking some college football with my good friend Brad later on in this hour. Wes Reynolds on the Rocket Classic, as it has been remarkable, the scores we are seeing there in Michigan. Chris Miles from NBA TV, his thoughts on the draft, also the Kevin Durant move. What else could we see coming up as free agency starts here very shortly? Joe Fortenbaugh's in town to talk about the UFC, UFC 317, and Chuck Esposito will give us the latest from behind the counter. So a busy show, as we always like to do here on the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. You could always tweet me. I'm at one Tim Murray as we get you set for a busy day. There was a lot that unfolded last night, which we will get to here in just a little bit, but let's get you ready, like we always do, with the biggest games of the day. Let's set the scene.
Let's dive into the biggest games of the day.
Yes, indeed. And as mentioned, it is International Fight Week, and we had some of the Power Slap fighters here in and out of Circa over the past couple of days. We had a little bit of an upset in the main event last night, as the Hawaiian Hitman is now your heavyweight champion. But we got UFC 317 tonight. Charles Oliveira and Ilya Topura. That is the lightweight title fight. It is for the vacant lightweight crown, and pretty significant favorite is Ilya Topura, as he is right now here at Circa minus 380. Over under on rounds, just 1.5. It is juiced to the over here at Circa minus $1.25. And as you see right there at DraftKings, minus 145. Ilya Topura has been tremendous as of late, as he's been on a roll. Let's hear from Topura, the massive favorite tonight in the octagon.
I'm the best fighter in the world. And it's not that if I'm gonna win the belt, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna knock him out in the first round. They always used to be like this, but after the fight, you know what's happened.
All right, there you go. He's going to knock him out in the first round. I guess you should take the plus money on under 1.5 rounds there. Topuria is 16-0. Last fight we saw from him back in October, he knocked out Max Holloway in the third round over in Abu Dhabi. So undefeated in the UFC at 16-0. His last six out of his last seven fights ended either via knockout or submission. Only one of those last seven fights did go to the cards. It was a unanimous win over Josh Emmett back on June 24th of 2023. So Charles Oliveira, more of the grizzled vet, so to speak, as he is a significant underdog here tonight. 35-10 for Oliveira as they fight for the vacant lightweight championship crown here this evening. Last time we saw Oliveira, he did win at UFC 309 back in November, a unanimous decision over Michael Chandler. So that's the main event. The co-main is Alex Pantoja, your champ of the flyweight division, against Kai Kara France. And Kai Kara France, he is the underdog today, and he will be repping his home country of New Zealand.
Well, last time I fought at T-Mobile Arena, that's when I knocked out Cody Garbrandt. So it's always been good to me in Las Vegas. So I'm expecting to do the same when I step out here Saturday night. So just know everyone back home, I'm representing all of us, and I'm bringing that belt back home.
All right, there you go. Kai Kara France is a round a plus 200 underdog for the co-main event. So two title fights tonight, and we'll get much more on UFC 317 in the third hour of the show. We'll talk to Joe Fortenbaugh from ESPN. We will also check in from behind the counter and talk to Chuck Esposito. When we have fights here in Vegas, handle usually is certainly elevated, so we will get the thoughts of both Chuck and Joe Fortenbaugh in the final hour of the show to get you ready for UFC 317. Also, check out VSiN.com for our write-ups and previews for UFC 317. As always, a Saturday loaded baseball slate, and the one that jumps out to me, the third start of the season for Shohei Ohtani. So Shohei Ohtani, since coming back from Tommy John's surgery, has made two starts. He's only pitched an inning in both of those two starts. However, last time out against the Washington Nationals, an inning and two strikeouts for Shohei Ohtani. So do we see him get stretched out a little bit more? Seth Lugo will be the starter today at Kauffman Stadium for the Kansas City Royals. So Shohei Ohtani and the Dodgers, they get going today at 4:10 Eastern time. They are around a minus 160 favorite for this afternoon's affair in Kansas City. And when you take a look at where we're at for today's action across the board and pitching props, it's always so challenging when you look at Ohtani and what you want to do with those pitching props, because you just don't know how long he's going to be out there. His over-under on strikeouts for today is sitting at 1.5, juiced over at minus $1.70. So we'll see if they do stretch out Ohtani a little bit more today, but that'll be a 4:10 first pitch there at Kauffman Stadium as the Dodgers take on the Kansas City Royals. It was a pretty wild day in Major League Baseball yesterday. We had a Greg Maddux complete game, which we will get to, from Sonny Gray. We almost had a no-hitter across in Cincinnati, so we'll get to that in the final segment, on the other side of the break. But the other one I wanted to note today, as you look at the golf calendar, and the Rocket Classic is going on, and boy, we have seen some low scores, haven't we, in Detroit, Michigan. How about this graphic that the PGA Tour put out there? No course record is safe. We have seen three different course records. We had a tie of a course record there. That was by Max Grazerman, who had a 63 on Thursday. Later in the day, Aldrich Pottgeter and Kevin Roy both went 62. So we had a course record tie. And then yesterday, Jake Knapp went out and broke the course record, shooting a 61. So as we look at the scores right now, heading into the third round of the Rocket Classic, we have three golfers at 14 under par. We have one at 13 under par. And then we've got a handful at 12 under par. And what's fascinating is when you look at the odds board for the Rocket Classic, usually as we head into the third round of a golf event, especially if there was a particular world number one golfer there in Scottie Scheffler, usually we've got plus $2, plus $3. Well, Chris Kirk is your favorite at 7-1. And a gentleman who I've yet to mention, who is three off the pace, Colin Morikawa, he's sitting at plus 850. So Colin Morikawa right now is your second shot to win the Rocket Classic, despite being three strokes back. A 69 on Thursday, a 64 yesterday. He had a little walk-in talk yesterday on the Rocket Classic Twitter feed, and let's hear from Colin Morikawa after his performance yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, knowing this course is going to require a lot of birdies, a lot of, you know, just really clean golf. It's really anyone's game, but when you've had success before, it just helps you kind of bring back memories from good shots. Like, I've only played here once, so I only remember those four rounds and a lot of good shots, but that doesn't mean, you know, I'm starting anything less than everyone. We all started even, and I've got to kind of execute the shots this week.
So Colin Morikawa there, courtesy of the Rocket Classic Twitter feed, plus 850 for Morikawa heading into today's third round. He's plus 130 to finish top five. Curious, as I'm going to take a snapshot of this odds board, and when we reconvene tomorrow morning, we're going to look at it and see how drastically different it is, because If you go out there and you shoot a 69 today, you're in trouble. You're going to fall back in the pack. So pretty interesting to see what's unfolding there at the Rocket Classic. Wes Reynolds going to help us make some sense of it in hour number two. He'll join the show at 11:15 Eastern time. So Chris Kirk, once again, is your favorite at 7-1. He shot back-to-back 65s to start the Rocket Classic. But yes, we've seen a handful of course records, including yesterday, Jake Knapp shooting a 61. And Jake Knapp, how about you take a look at him? He's tied for eighth. Yesterday's card, birdie, birdie, 1-2, birdie, 4-5, birdie, 7-8. So he shot a 30 on the front nine, 6-under. Back nine, he shot a 31, but at 13, it was a birdie, 14 birdie, 16 birdie, eagle on 17, a course record 61 yesterday for Jake Knapp. And that isn't even good enough to get him anywhere near close to the top of the odds board. He's still 28-1 to win the Rocket Classic. So crazy numbers out there. And once again, Wes Reynolds in our number two. All right, we're up and running. It is the VSiN weekend morning line. As we like to say, before we take all the way steps forward, we like to take a step back about last night. It was a busy night in Major League Baseball as we had another under in the Yankees game. The Yankees continue to just cash unders every single night. A tremendous pitching performance in Cincinnati, a phenomenal pitching performance by the St. Louis Cardinals as well. A whole lot to get to on the other side of the break. I'm Tim Murray. You can always tweet me at @1TimMurray. We're up and running on this Saturday morning. It's International Fight Week. Plenty of UFC chatter in hour number three. But about last night, a whole lot went on in Major League Baseball. We'll make sense of it on the other side right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You're tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
Here on a Saturday morning, I'm Tim Murray, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. You know, Wimbledon starts on Monday, and I know our guy Zachary Cohen already got a column up over at vsin.com. Zach's going to join the show tomorrow, but coming up in 15 minutes, Drew Dinsick, he's going to jump on the program. We'll talk a little NBA with Drew, get his thoughts on the NBA draft, the Kevin Durant move, anything that surprised him from earlier this week at the NBA draft. But we'll also make sure to hit on some Wimbledon with Drew. So that gets going on Monday. I believe, as Drew told me, the wee hours of the morning on Monday. So we'll talk to Drew Dinsick at @whale_capper coming up. And then my good friend Brad Powers talking college football as we are 9 weeks away, baby, from the start of the college football season. 9 weeks from the first full college football Saturday, 8 weeks away from that appetizer, week number zero. We did find out earlier this week, because of the Canelo fight at Allegiant Stadium, that UNLV will now be playing in week zero. So now we got 5 FBS games in week zero. Works for me, baby. Keep bringing them in. And that will all wrap up with Hawaii taking on Stanford. That'll be the 7:30 Eastern game. And Farmageddon over in Ireland, Iowa State and Kansas State. Should be a fun one to start the college football season. Two teams with hopes that they will win the Big 12. And I want to get to some news out of the Big 12. We'll do that much later on in the show. Something that Brett McMurphy, America's Insider, broke yesterday that I think made social media laugh quite a bit regarding the Big 12 as they have their media days, I believe, starting not this week, but the following week. So the first group of media days will indeed be the Big 12. So a whole lot to get to here in this hour. As mentioned, UFC 317 tonight. A lot on that coming up in the final hour of the program. More on the Rocket Classic in hour number two with Wes Reynolds. But as we like to do here on the program, if you're new to the show, welcome. We're with you every Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time. It is the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. We set the scene for you to start the show, but then we take a step back because, look, I don't know what you were doing last night. I'm not here to judge, but you might not have been able to see everything, and that's fine. That's why we're here for you. Maybe you threw in a little ticket last night. You got a little, went a little hard. That's fine. We'll tell you what happened and some of the more unique things that unfolded last night, including a near no-hitter in Cincinnati. And I get it. No-hitters aren't what they once were, but Nick Martinez was fantastic last night as he took a no-no into the ninth inning. The Reds get the win 8-1 over the San Diego Padres. Unfortunately for Mr. Martinez, he did not get there all the way to the finish line for the no-hitter. He finishes up going 8 innings, gives up 1 hit. He allows that run to score. It was inherited as he exited the game. But 112 pitches for Nick Martinez, no-hitter into the ninth inning. His manager, Terry Francona.
I mean, that's as nervous as I've been in a long, long time. I guess, you know, they say good things happen to good people. And, you know, the kid, what he did this week going to the bullpen seemed kind of like he deserved that.
Yeah, I mean, Nick Martinez threw an inning of relief on Monday night against the New York Yankees. He goes out there last night. He throws 8 no-hit innings, and the Cincinnati Reds get the victory over the San Diego Padres. The Reds last night, short dog at home, around plus 115 here at Circa. The Reds, much to my delight, because that is a preseason win total that I have over 78.5 wins, playing some good baseball right now. They are 43-39. Of course, they have some excitement coming out of Cincinnati with the young phenom in Burns there. As you take a look right now at the NL Rookie of the Year odds, and right now Chase Burns dropped back down to 8-1. I don't know if you saw this, but our guy Will Hill took a 100-1 bet on Chase Burns when the word came out last weekend that he had been promoted to the major leagues. He goes out, he strikes out the first 5 New York Yankees. His odds got as low as 3-1. And then Jacob Mizorowski said, yeah, that's cool, but I'm going to go out and beat Paul Skeens head-to-head on Wednesday afternoon. So the NL Rookie of the Year odds, which are wide open, Mizorowski now is your odds-on favorite at minus $1.45. Despite just starting 3 games so far, Chase Burns, after one start, back down to 8-1. Well, speaking of the New York Yankees, a team that the Cincinnati Reds took care of business 2 out of 3 times earlier this week, they beat the A's last night 3-0. And why am I bringing this up? Well, it's the Yankees, and a lot of people like to bet on the Yankees. They were a massive favorite, the New York Yankees were last night, as high as minus 255 here at Circa. And as you see on the graphic, minus 267. But what I wanted to bring up regarding the New York Yankees is that is the 15th consecutive under for the New York Yankees. Yes, Evan Abrams pointing this out, our good friend over at the Action Network. The Yankees have now gone under the total in 15 straight games. That is the longest over or under streak for any team in the last 9 years. 15 straight unders for the New York Yankees. They get the win last night, 3-0. Very good pitching performance from Will Warren. He went 5 scoreless innings, struck out 7, walked 4 over 5 innings of work. His manager is Aaron Boone.
Yeah, it was big. You know, he's probably 2 hitters away from being out of the game. So, but thought his body language was good. You knew he was frustrated, but just continued to stay after it. And I think he knows if he can get back in the zone, he's got the confidence that he's got the stuff that he can get right out of that, and he can get swing and miss in the strike zone, which he did. So.
And Aaron Boone alluding to the first inning where he actually walked the bases loaded. What a unique first inning for Will Warren. Struck out the side, but also walked the bases loaded and was able to get out of it. And as Aaron Boone mentioned, he was close to being yanked in that first inning. Ultimately, he wasn't. He went 5 innings. Not the most efficient performance, but still 5 scoreless innings for Will Warren, 7 strikeouts. How about this? So Will Warren goes 5 innings yesterday. Yankees get the 3-0 shutout. Did you see the performance from Sonny Gray? This was a Maddox-esque performance from Sonny Gray. So Will Warren, 5 innings, 100 pitches. Sonny Gray, complete game shutout, 89 pitches. Check out these stats. Sonny Gray tonight, this was last night, 9 innings, 1 hit, no runs, no walks, 11 strikeouts, 89 pitches. Dalton Feely pointing out he is the only pitcher in MLB history to throw 9 innings, one or less hits, no earned runs, no walks, 11 plus strikeouts in under 90 pitches. And in all caps, Dalton says, one of the best pitching performances ever. Maybe so. Sonny Gray was Maddox-esque last night. That is a incredible line. Will Warren of the Yankees, strong, five innings, 100 pitches, no runs. Sonny Gray, complete game shutout, throws 89 pitches last night as the St. Louis Cardinals get a nice win on the road against the Cleveland Guardians. They were around a $1.22 underdog. How about the Philadelphia Phillies? They were an underdog last night in a game that was delayed heavily due to rain. Here at Circa, they were plus 160. They won 13-0 over the Atlanta Braves last night. So the Philadelphia Phillies, as a dog, wound up winning 13-0 against the Atlanta Braves last night, as this was not the best evening for Bryce Elder of the Atlanta Braves, who gave up 10 runs, nine of them earned on eight hits and just two innings of work. So the Philadelphia Phillies, they put it on the Atlanta Braves last night, despite being a plus 160 underdog. And then I wanted to point this out. Sarah Langs, who just does such a good job of finding unique things out there regarding Major League Baseball, she pointed out what we saw last night at Camden Yards and how unique it was. The Orioles, once upon a time, were down by six runs yesterday. The Orioles' 14-run win is the largest by a team in a game. It trailed by at least six runs in at least 125 years. Yes, the Orioles, who at one point last night, the Baltimore Orioles, were trailing 6-0 against the Tampa Bay Rays, came back and put up a 22 spot on the Tampa Bay Rays. They won 22-8 last night. And folks at Camden Yards were thinking at the end of the second inning or middle of the second inning, man, down 6-0, this isn't going to end up well. And the Orioles went on to win by 14 runs. I don't know what the in-game price was, but I'm sure it was pretty juicy if you had a crystal ball and said, you know, Orioles are going to come back from this 6-0 deficit. Last night, the Orioles were a pre-flop slight dog at around plus 110. I'm going to go ahead and say over 8.5, pretty easy cash for anyone out there who had the over last night. Also, by the way, last night, if you're into the boxing game, the return of Deontay Wilder, he got a victory there, I believe, in the seventh round. He was around like a minus 1,500 favorite. Hey, folks, if you're betting on sports, why not try The Races? First Bet lets you wager on hundreds of horse races every day. Sign up at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. Use the promo code VSIN200 to claim a 20% rebate on your first 60 days, up to $200. Firstbet.com.
Tuned in to the VSIN Weekend Morning Line.
We keep it rolling here on a Saturday morning. Hello, everyone. Tim Murray with you here until 1 o'clock Eastern time. You can always tweet me at 1TimMurray. We are 8 weeks away from our first college football game. Brad Powers coming up in less than 15 minutes. But before then, we, of course, will get Wimbledon rolling over in lovely England. And we'll also talk a little NBA as we had a week to recap here with Drew Dinsick, who joins us right now, courtesy of our Progressive guest line. You can follow Drew at @whale_capper, NBC Sports. He's all over the place. Drew, before we dive into Wimbledon, which I know you're chomping at the bit to do, take a quick step back. You're a great NBA handicapper. As we look at the futures board right now, the West is loaded. The East seems wide open. As we digest the NBA draft, we look at a couple of trades that have unfolded. Anyone in the futures market to you that you feel like is worth a bet and or is overvalued in your opinion right now?
Well, overvalued, obvious answer is Houston Rockets. Congratulations for upgrading your offense. You've slightly raised your playoff ceiling now that you have a go-to player in crunch time in a difficult game seven. You gave up a lot to get him. And I don't know that you have a second banana that really supports your going toe to toe with the Thunder. I think you're right in that in relative to the East, the West is loaded, but I think it's all middle class. Hmm. I think it's all like it's a very upper middle class, we'll say, of teams 3 through 12 in the West, which is going to make it fascinating because you're going to have, you know, probably six teams with 50 wins, maybe a team with, you know, 45 wins, 46 wins might not even get into the playoffs in the West, which is amazing. That might have happened last year, actually, now that I think about it. I mean, it's a really good upper middle class in the West, but there's really only two teams that I think can win the title next year, and two teams that can win the West. One of them is the Thunder and the other is the Nuggets. I think pretty clearly, if the Nuggets were at full strength, that is to say, if Michael Porter Jr. did not have a shoulder injury to the tune of he couldn't take his jersey off, then he would have been a more sincere threat to shoot in that series. I think if Jamal Murray didn't have the knee injury that limited him in games 5 and 7, you would have had a really serious second threat that the Thunder never really had an answer for. Of course, if Aaron Gordon doesn't tear his hamstring in game 6, the Nuggets might have just won that series last year.
Yeah.
So they have the best player in the NBA in Jokic still, in my opinion. Congratulations to SGA for completing the hat trick of conference MVP, finals MVP, league MVP. But Jokic is still the best player, and he will have something to say about who ultimately is your 2026 champion, assuming that he has a healthy squad in support. I'm fascinated to see what that front office, now that there's been some turnover, does too to try to fortify some of the role players there. We know where Westbrook is gone, but Christian Braun took a massive step forward this year. He was very, very good player for the Nuggets, and if he takes more progressive steps forward and then they fortify that bench unit a bit, then the Nuggets are not that far from the Thunder. The easy answer to what happens next year is the Thunder just win. That's probably what happens, right? Like, this year was their first ever kind of run through the playoffs. Like, we're talking like 14-15 Warriors. Yep. Like, they made it harder than it had to be, you know? Ultimately, they get there thanks to an injury. Not to say they wouldn't have won anyway if Haliburton doesn't tear his Achilles, but that certainly made it easier for them. You know, now that they have that experience under their belt, if they have a healthy squad back next year, they probably should just win. They're a super team on paper. There's nothing you can say that would really change my mind that they don't clearly stand above all else as the best. But I will go to war that the Nuggets are close enough to them that they should be considered realistic contenders. And I have some 20-1 in pocket. It's down to 15-1 at the board you have up now. And I'm perfectly fine taking 15-1 on that price point. If you're going to lock up money for a year, you might as well get a bigger score. And that would be the Nuggets. There's also a world where the Thunder come out next year and they're not really like firing on all cylinders because they don't have anything to prove anymore. Right. Like, it could be, we could get to Christmas before the Thunder really ramp it up. They played a lot of basketball this spring, Tim. Like, those guys, they were, you know, that puts a hurting on your body. And I know there's no international basketball really to muck things up this summer, so they'll get some rest, but they may not be ready to ramp up until Christmas, New Year's. And in that world, the Nuggets might end up being top of the standings as we get to that point. And 15-1 might look more like, 5-1 or something like that, which is what I think it should be.
Yeah. And I think that's a really astute point too, about the Thunder. Is like, look, if you think they're going to win the title, I'm not going to disagree with you, but are you going to get much of a change there? We've seen some market movement, as you alluded to, with the Nuggets. Drew Dinsick joining us here. Drew, let's get to your baby. You know, you love all sports. You do a great job at the NFL and the NBA, horse racing, obviously, giving out winners on the Derby a couple weeks back. But let's get to tennis, the All England Club. It starts in the, as you said, the wee hours on Monday morning. Let's look at the men's draw. Carlos Alcaraz +120, Jannik Sinner +2, Novak Djokovic +650. Who would you look at there for the men's draw?
This is a two horse race, if you will. There's really, you could draw a line, in my opinion, after Jannik Sinner on the board here. I'm fine if you want to make a case, if you want to bet Djokovic and just say like, hey, he's got one more run in him. He looks pretty good in the French Open. He's healthier than he was this time last year. All that is true. But he has a Jannik Sinner problem and he's going to have to go through Sinner to get to the final. So I'm not betting on that. His quarter is a little bit more difficult. I still think think he wins his quarter. I still think he is ultimately going to go toe-to-toe with Sinner, but I don't know that I would support him even winning a set against Sinner, even though the surface favors him relative to clay, which is where we saw these two men play last, and Sinner absolutely took him apart. So I think ultimately for the gentleman side, you tune in July 13th. That is the Wimbledon gentleman's final, and you enjoy one of a rematch of a top three tennis match that I've seen
God,
in
it was
my
so
life.
Good. I mean, that was so good. I'm not even a big look. I enjoy watching it, Drew, but my God, I was mesmerized. It was on the air while I drove home, sprinted home. I'm even telling my son, I'm like, you got to watch this. Like, this is incredible.
Yeah. When the stakes are that high, sometimes the quality can be a little uneven, right? Like, teams are just nervous. Like, you felt that in the NBA Finals. Like, yep. I don't think anyone would, look at it, stand back and look at the whole seven-game series and be like, that was a quality product, right? It's rare when you get the two best with the biggest stakes, and they perform at that level. And I think we're going to get it again at Wimbledon. I'm backing Alcaraz this time, even though he is the short shot between these two. I would make him about minus 200 in a head-to-head against Sinner in that spot. He's got the easier path also, by the way, to get there. Now, I think Sinner absolutely waltzes through quarter one. Quarter one is very weak, in my opinion. I don't think there's really anyone to challenge him there. But he does have to play Djokovic in the semifinals, which I think he'll defeat. But, the path for Alcaraz to the finals is literally he could moonwalk there. Like, this looks very, very straightforward for him. And so he is now your two-time defending champion here. He is the best men's player on grass. And recent form is absolutely superlative. At Queen's last week, he was serving aces at a rate that I've never seen in his career. If he is feeling that level of confidence in his serve and he has that rhythm and timing, and he's getting free points, best of luck defeating him. Alcaraz plus 120 is short. My fair price is on the would have a minus sign in front of it. I think he should be about a 58-59% chance to win. I think you can put a little plus money in pocket and then have a good old laugh in two Sundays in a fortnight when he's minus 200 against Sinner.
All right, let's. I know we've got a more complicated situation on the ladies' side. You've got Sabalenka as your favorite at plus 260. Her and Coco Gauff are best of friends now. Coco Gauff is 8-1. We got about a minute. How do you look at the women's side?
So there are two men who can win the gentlemen's. There are 128 women who can win the ladies. The last 2 years, the winner has been a full-on random out of the clouds. How in the world did this happen? Like, I'm still stunned. Vondrousova is 16-1 on the board right now. She won 2 years ago, had won two grass tennis matches in her life before she went and won that championship. Last year, Barbora Krejcikova comes from the clouds to win. It was her second slam, but she had never done anything on grass other than doubles. So yeah, I would say this is absolutely wide open, which means one thing, the price at the top of the board for Aryna Sabalenka is banana land. This is insanely short. No freaking world does she have better than a 25% chance to win this tournament. Her quarter is loaded with good players, and she has a war on her hand. It's gonna get messy for her in week one. So it's not even like she has a tough test in round four, and then the quarter, and then the and then the sum up. No, it gets messy for her early. So I'm against Sabalenka here. Give me a final where it is Madison Keys, American Zone Slam winner of the Australian Open over Iga Swiatek. I think those are your two finalists, and I have both outright in pocket.
Like it, Drew. You're the man. Great insight on Wimbledon. This is the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. Let's talk a little college football on the other side with Brad Powers.
Tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
Look, folks, got to tell you something before we get to Brad Powers. If you're serious about winning this football season, the VSiN NFL Betting Guide is your first real edge. Coming out this Tuesday, July 1st, it's packed with in-depth previews of all 32 teams, season win total breakdowns, best bets from VSiN experts, everything you need to know. So kick off your season with confidence and get full access to everything VSiN. betting guide, daily best bets, and exclusive content through the Super Bowl, all for just $175. Head on over to VSiN.com/subscribe. It is the VSiN Weekend Morning Line with you every Saturday and Sunday. And also, make sure to check out the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. 30 days or so ago, I welcome this fine gentleman to the podcast as he made his venture across the country, leaving us here in Vegas to move to Ohio. The one and only Brad Powers joins us, courtesy of our Progressive guest line. He is there, safe and sound, wearing the enemy's colors. Brad, do you walk out of your house wearing that Notre Dame hat in Ohio?
I do. I'm almost on the Indiana border. It's only 15 minutes away. So, I mean, it's a very Catholic area. So, nobody's giving me a hard time yet.
All right, let's get to this. Since you're wearing the Notre Dame hat, let's talk a little college football playoff market. DraftKings has to make or miss. So, if you think, you know, some of these teams are going to miss, you could hit the no. Before we hit on teams that you've already bet, I want to talk about Alabama, because I've talked about Bama quite a bit on the podcast, and I know you're intrigued by them as well. What would be your advice regarding Alabama? Because I know you're high on the Crimson Tide, but is there a way in your eyes to maybe bet them during the season?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I bet over the win total, got a really good number. I would still, you know, lean over 9.5. They're only going to be an underdog in one game. Doesn't necessarily equate to 11-1, but I don't see the team losing three games, in my opinion. Obviously, the quarterback is the major question mark, but I think they'll get better, more consistent passing from the quarterback position this year. How to handle the Tide? I still think there's a little bit of value in week one. My numbers are closer to 14 on that Florida State game, so that's still a little bit left on the apple there. I think they're very live in the SEC. I think that's worth a small bet, even though the odds have moved a little bit. But as far as the make or miss playoffs, it's a new market. It's only second year that we've seen this. Since that game's early at Georgia, and I do expect Georgia to win that game in Athens. They haven't lost a home game since 2019. I'd rather bet Alabama low and bet them to make the playoffs after, in my opinion, perceived loss at Georgia at the end of September.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a unique market. And I was talking to Chris Felica about it this week on the podcast, where, you know, you've seen the books adjust, right? I was looking at it because last year we all wish we had a ticket of Indiana. There's a couple folks that had it at 200-1, 100-1 to make the playoff. You look at it now, Brad, and by my, you know, eyes, I think there's only like three power teams that have north of 100-1 odds, and that's like Stanford, Purdue, and maybe Wake Forest. Those teams that just have no realistic shot. So it doesn't seem to be as juicy, but there's still opportunities out there. So who are some teams that you have bet in the make or miss the college football playoff market already?
I bet Clemson. I have more Clemson in pocket than any other team in college football this offseason, whether it's ACC week one, over win total, Cade Klubnik to win the Heisman, and also to make the playoffs. I just think they're that much better than everybody else in the ACC. I know they play, you know, the somewhat difficult schedule, but to get SMU at home, that's probably their toughest ACC game. At Georgia Tech's a little tricky. LSU and South Carolina, I can make a case that's their two toughest games in their non-conference games. But I just think this team, from a power ratings aspect, is more than a touchdown better than the number two team in the ACC, that being Miami. So if you went last I checked, though, if you win the ACC, you're going to the playoffs. So I did bet Clemson to make the playoffs, and I still think that's showing some slight value. The other team, Group of Five, I bet Boise. Similar. They are so much better, in my opinion, than anybody else at the Group of Five level. More than a touchdown better than the second best team. And I also think they'll get the benefit of the doubt. The Notre Dame game, they can lose and be fine. I think there's a trust factor with the Boise State program. If it's between them and another program, I don't think, you know, Boise State in the committee's eyes is a program that's not going to embarrass themselves on the national stage, like a la Liberty, totally outclassed a couple of years ago in the Fiesta Bowl against shorthanded Oregon. So I bet Boise State to make the playoff.
College football handicapper Brad Powers joining us as we are 56 days away from week zero of the college football season. Follow him on social media at Brad Powers 7. So you're wearing the Notre Dame hat. And I want to preface it this way, because I think when you look at this year's college football landscape. There are a lot of really talented teams with questions at quarterback. We hit on one regarding Alabama. So if you look at Ohio State with Julian Sain, you look at Texas with Arch Manning, you look at Oregon with Dante Moore, Georgia with Gunnar Stockton, Alabama, Ty Simpson, Notre Dame with CJ Carr. Looking at those five, six teams, Brad, if one of them hits at quarterback or two, who do you think has the highest ceiling?
Believe it or not, I'm not a homer. You know this. I think it's Notre Dame. I think it's Notre Dame, partly not only because of the personnel. I mean, they have as much returning experience as any of those other teams. They obviously have playoff experience as much, if not more than all those other teams. But it's also schedule dependent. I mean, if he's a hit, I mean, Notre Dame is going to, their toughest games week one against Miami. They're a 3-point favorite. If he's a hit and they win that game, I mean, they're going to be more than a touchdown favorite in every single game and a double-digit favorite probably in 10 of their 12 games. So they've just, you know, from a schedule aspect and a talent aspect and experience, I think they'd have the highest ceiling. Texas probably be two. They number one recruiting class coming in, really went out and got some guys post-spring portal that I like. But, you know, there's some questions for me on the O-line, D-line. But, again, we're going to know, right, and there's not going to be, oh, I got to wait a few weeks. No, I mean, I'm going to know what Texas has immediately, just like Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, that's the incredible thing about this season. Clemson, LSU, week one, Alabama, Florida State, Ohio State, Texas, and Notre Dame, Miami, all in week one. You could always tweet me at 1TimMurray. Chris Heath chimes in. He says, I'm on under West Virginia wins. He bet at 5 at even money. I think DraftKings is 5.5 -70 to the under. Before we dive into the Big 12, West Virginia, thoughts on year one of Rich Rod part two?
Yeah, I mean, I like the Rich Rod hire. I don't think it's a slam dunk like everybody else in Morgantown thinks it's going to be. Obviously, a complete roster turnover like most first-year coaches. I've said this on some of the other shows I've done. In the last 4 years, since NIL and the transfer portal have become super prominent, if you blindly bet the under on every first-year coach, you're hitting 57%, about 100 team sample size. And that was using like mid-July numbers against a sharp book, not necessarily, you know, early in the summer type numbers. So I bet under 5.5 wins. Keep in mind, a half win's worth about 70, 75 cents. So I'd prefer that extra half win there at DraftKings on West Virginia under 5.5. It's one of my favorite bets I made so far this offseason.
All right. So Chris and you in unison here. So looking at the Big 12, you know, we're going to talk about it later on in the show about the news coming out yesterday that they're going to do away with the preseason poll, because last year's preseason poll was laughable, where you look at 1, 2, 3, and 5 all missed out on a bowl game, and 16 out of 16, Arizona State won the conference. So that being said, when we look at this odds board right now, Brad, how far do you go down to look at as a team that maybe take a flyer on to win this conference?
I mean, I think you can go 8-10 teams. That's how deep the conference is. I mean, I got 10 teams within a touchdown of one another as far as my power ratings. This one, you know, the market, I think some of the best value, in my opinion, has been dried up a little bit. I did bet Texas Tech and Utah. I think that those two of the teams that were down the board a little bit, I thought they had the highest ceilings because Utah, I'm a big fan of the quarterback and new OC. And plus, as a program, there's a good trust factor there. And Texas Tech being the number one transfer portal class in the country, I bet them. Now at current, Iowa State's pretty steady. I would maybe a slight, you know, pizza bet there. But reality is, I think it's no different than last year. I wouldn't be a bit surprised any of those teams could win it. Although I will say those two teams listed last there, Kansas and Colorado, I don't like them this year. I like under their win totals.
Yeah, Colorado, we'll see what they've got going on. I know Deion is dealing with a whole bunch of health issues right now, too. So we'll see how that ultimately plays out. Brad, always appreciate the insight, man. You know I'll be bugging you nonstop as we get ready for the football season.
Go Irish.
There he is. Man, whew. If you know Brad, That is that's some strong positivity there for our beloved Irish, which we can get into. Hey, folks, if you need a proxy, you can join the world's biggest football contest with one trip to Vegas anytime before the season starts. Trusted by thousands of players over the last nine seasons, Winner's Circle Proxy Service helped clients win over $9.3 million over the last two seasons. Learn more about using a trusted proxy service, head on over to winnerscircleproxy.com/VSIN. It is the VSIN Weekend Morning Line. Cooper Flagg, he's headed to Dallas.